But how does my ministry fulfill the organization's vision or mission? I went, how long is a piece of string? You know. So I'm going to be very happy to try and drill down into this question with you this morning. So that's what I want to do. I want to try and drill down into that particular question as our guiding focus for our time. How does my group, how does what I do in this place as a leader, how does it fulfill the organization mission, the outworking of the vision of the community? And by way of introduction, I'd like to start off this morning by going to a passage of scripture. Then I'm going to explain to you in terms of the question really in two parts. I'm going to answer the question in two parts. And then before I jump off, I'm going to create a backdrop a little bit in order to frame our discussion. So I'm going to have the scripture. I'm going to sort of tell you how I'm going to address your question. And then I'm going to give you a framework of reference, okay? But first, three presuppositions before I begin. Three presuppositions. As I sit here and look at you this morning, as I pondered doing this in my study, it's my belief that every leader wants to make a great impact, a greater impact. Is that true? Yes. You know, every leader wants to make a greater impact and to be part of something great. Otherwise, why are you a leader? Seriously. And every leader wants to fulfill the vision of that organization. Do you? These are my presuppositions. I'm building on the case that this is what I believe. And every member, if every leader's that way, every member wants to live a meaningful life with purpose. I'm trusting that the people that you lead or they follow you and however, they themselves are part of this whole process of wanting to have a life of meaningful purpose and service. The text this morning I want you to look at is from Philippians 3 verses 16 to 17. If you can turn with that in your devices. Remember I'd said devices, not vices. Yeah. Nothing that to the side, but your devices. I still like this, even though I'm into, you know, the rest of the stuff, I still like my Bible. I want to read from Paul's letter to the Philippians. And it says, let us live up to what we have already attained. Now, what he means there is just personally as well as corporately. Because he's talking a bit more about the model, the group. So let us live up to what we have already attained. Join together, here's the group dimension, join together in following my example, brothers and sisters, just as you have as a model. Keep your eyes on those who live as we do. So he's talking about his group identity, not just a personal identity. Keep your eyes on this working model, something that you can actually aspire to. I'm giving you something to aspire to, not just personally, but as a group. This is the model. And keep your eyes on those who live out this model. That's what he's saying. And this passage, you know, it's interesting. You know, he says here, following on, if you actually go back to, say, verse 13 and 14, Paul's sort of bit of a mandate here says, it's about forgetting what lies behind you and keeping your eyes fixed on the prize. So leading into that 16 and 17, if you went back and read 13 and 14, it says, forgetting what lies behind you, keeping your eyes fixed on the prize, pressing on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called you. Now, by inference, these verses exhort us to do likewise, to do what Paul was doing individually and also as a group of people in terms of his team. He's modeling for the people life and ministry. Life and ministry. And Paul's saying, if you want to stay true to the model of what I have as my personal calling and my ministry mandate, regardless of the distractions. Now, Paul, regardless of his distractions, Paul, regardless of the people's opinions around him, regardless of the opposition, he lived up to his personal calling and he never moved from his ministry mandate. True? And so he's saying, you need to find people like that. You need to be in a company of people like that. And no matter what you do in terms of your calling, it must fit the total package of what you've signed up together to do. That's what he's saying. That's the ministry mandate he's asking of you. Or he said, like he says, keep your eyes on those who do what we do. Do what I do, yes. In another passage of Scripture, he said, if you want to do the right thing, just follow my life. Here he's saying, not just me personally, but now he's saying us as a group. Keep your eyes on those sort of people. So we need to make sure that not only we're living up to the calling that God's called us to, but the ministry mandate that we've signed up to together is also being lived out true to why you signed up to it in the first place. We'll explore the answer to the questions, these questions by these two, part A and part B. Part A, staying mission true. So I want to talk to you about staying mission true. What am I going to talk to you about? Thank you. And the next one is about foundational components of that. How do you know that you've got the right foundation working in your ministry, in your life, to stay mission true? But first, let me set a backdrop for you. Essentially, a couple of things I want to deal with here. Every ministry needs a vision regardless of its focus. It's great to hear my brother here speak about purpose. He's going to volunteer today. Fits in really well what I'm going to talk about this morning. Every ministry needs a vision regardless of its focus. My question, does yours? If not, why not? And if not, how do you measure the essentials of its life and mission? How do you measure if you don't have a vision? My second essential in terms of this backdrop of why I want to address this question, the vision that you have must reflect the overarching mission and purpose of the organization. Whatever your vision, whatever you do in this place, must fit or reflect the overarching mission and the purpose of servants. My question, does yours? Can you demonstrate its functional, get this, can you demonstrate its functional connection through three simple statements? Through three very simple, ordinary statements, can you demonstrate the functional connection between what you do and the overarching vision and mission of this community, of the organization? Number three, get this one. Every influencer and those involved in the ministry, your ministry, must be able to articulate its vision, must be able to demonstrate their support of this vision, and also demonstrate that they are submitted to its missional outcomes. Let me say that again. Every influencer and those that are involved, by the way, we'll talk about influencers later and I'll explain what I mean by that, because you have both official and unofficial influencers. And sometimes the unofficial ones are more powerful than the official ones. So every influencer and those involved in the ministry must be able to articulate its vision, not theirs, but the vision and the mission, and demonstrate that they support it. So they've got to have a lifestyle. They've got to have a connection to the reality of what you're trying to do. They've got to demonstrate it. And also they've got to show a submission of their life and their ministry and what they speak about in terms of its missional outcomes, the outcomes of why they're doing what they're doing. That's why Paul says right at the beginning, don't follow anybody. Keep your eye on those who actually fit the mandate. Influencers need to be able to, like Paul saying, fit the mandate. So my question again, how's your score on these three? How's your score this morning? Now, by way of information, let me say this. It's about, when you're talking about vision, it's called vision simple, not vision complicated. I've heard so many people come up with so many complicated visions after they've told me about it. They say, how do you manage to do all that? Or how do you keep, you know, keep it simple? And a statement, let me just, what I would say what it needs to be. It's a statement of functional purpose, which needs to be clear, simple, and outcome friendly. It's got to be outcome friendly. You can't have people signing up for something that they don't fully understand, and can't actually themselves articulate it or speak about it in a way that's very friendly to the person who's asked the question of them. So keep it simple, keep it clear, and make sure it's got the ability in terms of outcome friendly. It should consist of what I call my five essentials. Did I put them in your notes here?
Yes.
Okay. Why have this ministry in the first place? I asked them a question. Why have this ministry in the first place? Why have it? What specifically do you hope to accomplish by it? How does it reflect the organization vision or mission? And in this case, more mission than vision, even though it says vision in your notes. More mission because this is about missional outcomes. And your ministry is about the cutting edge. It's not the policy. It's not the policy. Policy directive is the vision. The outcomes is attached to the mission. So it's about mission. How is it carrying out the mission of the organization? How's your ministry? How's what you do carry out the actual mission of this organization called servants? Because that's what you are. You're an organization. You're a church, you're a ministry, but you're an organization. You're an organization of volunteer people who've got an executive that actually helps you to function in life. So you're an organization. How you know if the micro community, by the way, you run a micro community, whatever you do, because it's called relationships. So how will you know if the micro community that you are leading is making progress and bearing fruit? And so my five essentials, if you're going to put this together, has got to cover those things. Now, let me say this to you. I found in history with me, and by the way, I found a little bit helping working with your servants leadership over the many years I've been doing this, that I found that when you're starting to develop vision and mission aspects with a group of people, it begins to unify. It begins to inspire. It begins to empower individuals in real life giving way, so they feel part of a journey. They feel part of this. They feel connected. They feel appreciated. They feel part of a much larger team. So if you, whatever sort of group you're working with, you need to be able to put yourself in the midst of this mix and help them draw out what they are seeing and feeling, and so they can have a contribution to this. All pretty simple, isn't it? We could finish now, couldn't we? I've given you enough to go away and think about this, answer those questions, those three. By the way, if you answer those three questions in the affirmative and you could do that, you'd be well on the way of fixing some of your volunteer problems. Because you start knowing how to measure certain outcomes about things. Okay, part A, staying mission true. This is a big one. In a church world like in general society, groups and organizations without careful attention inevitably drift from their founding purpose, their values, their mission, their principal reason of existence. This is called mission drift. Mission drift. What's it called? And therefore, it's vitally important to stay true to your mission. Otherwise, you will what? Your drift. And from my research and my years of experience, and I've been in this game for quite a while, both in business as well as in church and mission world, I've discovered five key insights that will enable an organization or ministry to stay true to their vision, their values, their mission as they develop, age, and grow. There's five of them. And I'm going to give you the five this morning, and I'm going to sort of pick them out by words, and then I'm going to drill down into them. The five words are, in your, what are they? Prepare, next one, placement, distinctive, stakeholders, measured. So let's consider each one of those. The number one insight in doing this in terms of staying mission true, in terms of true to your mission, regardless of who you are and what role you have, you know, regardless, whatever you fulfill within this organization, assume this. Assume this mission drift can happen to you. So if it's going to happen to you, no matter what level yet you are in the organization, what should you be? You should be prepared for it. It's about staying alert. It's recognizing the signs before you've actually moved too far down the stream in terms of shifting. Though pervasive in its nature, mission drift unfolds slowly, more a trickle than a flood. But like any current, it carries an organization, it carries a ministry away from their core identity, their core purpose and function, almost, but not quite, but almost without realizing that it's happened. Almost without realizing it. Now, let me give you a community example. You know, the pawn shop industry was actually created by Catholic friars. It was created by Catholic friars as a business enterprise to help poor families and communities. But today, in our society, this industry is known not for its service to the poor, but its victimization of the poor. That's mission drift. That's a mission drift. Now, according to a recent US-based survey that I discovered, it was presented just recently at a conference, 95% of leaders surveyed at this conference said mission drift is a challenging issue for them and their organization. 95% of Christian leaders at a conference in the States said this is a big challenge for them, mission drift. That's number one. So number one is be prepared, because assume it's going to happen to you. No matter what, top of the pile or down here, doesn't matter, wherever you sit within the context of the pecking order. So number two, in staying mission true, it's imperative that you grow leadership and people of influence around heart and mission first. This has to do with placement, who you place in roles. It's to do with placement. Placement should be on heart and mission first over experience, gifting, and credentials. Gifting, experience, credentials are great, but they are not first. Heart and mission is first. And I've made a mistake in my life in leadership where I went for experience and credentials over heart and mission. Disaster. Enough said on that one. It came around to bite you around about a year later. You know, choose leadership using criteria in line with the organization vision, values, and mission. That's what you should do. Your values and the core identity must be reflected in the attitudes and the actions. The attitudes and the actions of the group, and also be connected to the mission of their group. Otherwise, you'll have serious people and what is known as praxis issues to deal with. Now, what's praxis? You can say, what's practice? That's a big word for a Saturday morning for some of you. Praxis is really about taking theory and putting it into practice. It's about the accepted practical outcomes. It forms custom. It forms application. It's how you develop the habit of an organization. That's praxis. Taking the theory, it's putting it into a functional process. It informs customs and all those things. And if you don't have this particular number 2 point in place, if you don't have the right people in the system who's been chosen first on the mission and heart, what you're going to have, you're going to have serious people problems, and you're going to have serious praxis problems. It's vital to maintain the heart and the mission, the heart and mission of the core. Are the core groups going to be, that's what you've got to make sure that doesn't, you know, get filtered away. And you do need experienced people in the role. You need gifted people in the role. And you need people with good ideas. But good ideas does not trump heart and mission. I'll give you another example from society. Have you ever, years ago, did you ever come across, in the VCR days, I think it might have been, VeggieTales. VeggieTales, a company behind it was called Big Idea. And VeggieTales was likened once to a Christian Disney. And internally, though, right when Bob the Tomato and Larry the Cucumber were really at the peak of their fame. Now, you have to watch VeggieTales to know about Bob the Tomato and Larry the Cucumber. But right when they were actually at their fame around the world, there was the founder of Big Idea. He was in a board meeting. And in this board meeting, he stood up and he began to share the vision and the mission of Why VeggieTales. And he got up and he started to share about it. And he said, you know, the whole thing behind this and the reason we're doing it is really, he said, I want to share the good news of the Bible, my love for God and Jesus Christ with the culture in which we live in today. And I want VeggieTales to do that. That's why I started it. That's what it's all about. Then he talked some more probably, and then he sat down. Then his president, sitting in the board meeting of 2 years, stood up and responded by saying, ah, look, that's not for me, and up and resigned. 2 years later, Big Idea went bankrupt. Why am I telling you that? Why do you think I'm telling you that story? What does that story reflect? They hired the wrong person. It wasn't on heart and mission. Wasn't on heart and mission. By the way, that guy's been in president for 2 years. It was going gangbusters. Mission drift. Money had clouded the reality. Number three. They went bankrupt.
Yeah, but why did they go bankrupt?
Because the fact that the whole company was actually geared towards what they'd guide already put in place and they couldn't pull it back. Number three, in staying mission true, it's crucial to distinguish the mission from the means. This is about remaining distinctive. This is about your core identity. Organizations must stay true to the mission, although methodology may vary. They know why they exist and work to protect their core at all costs. And that's a very important thing in being able to stay mission true. They remain faithful to what they believe God has entrusted to them, and they define what is immutable. What is immutable? What is non-negotiable? They define what's immutable based on values and purpose, their DNA, their distinctive. And they don't sort of surrender that. Mission true organizations are not unwilling to change either. In fact, if they don't transform, they will stagnate and die. but they distinguish mission from means. What do? Mission from means. And that's what you've got to do as an organization. It's about remaining mission true. And if you remain mission true, they can adapt and grow. So long as the adaptation and the growth does not alter their core identity. That's the big thing. That's what happened to this particular story. They had this, they changed, but it changed their core identity. And so when the president got up and said, well, our core identity is this, they couldn't change now. The core identity of that company had totally changed. So in a sense, you have to make sure you keep your distinctives as part of this whole process. Otherwise, you will drift. Number four, in staying mission true, it's imperative to know who are the key influencers and decision makers. Now, this is the official and unofficial. And I've been in organizations, can I tell you, lots of organizations, both in business. As you know, many of you, I've run companies. I've flown around the world and set up businesses. I've consulted in different areas. And I've been a pastor. I've been in mission and church planting. So I've had a full life and many lives, as I like to say to people. And I can tell you that there are many influencers in an organization. Some are paid and some of the best ones are unpaid. And they become stakeholders. And sometimes they can hold down the tent flap when you want to pick your tent up and move to another spot. They don't want to move. They don't want to go. And so you can say, well, but hang on a minute, but they don't run the show. No, but they run something else called influence. And by the way, you've heard me say this in a positive way, you know, about people who have influence. People who have influence have something else. What do they have? Authority. They have some authority. And they speak out of that. So, you know, you have to be careful when understanding. It's imperative to know who are the key influencers and decision makers, both the ones that are up front and all the other ones as well. This is about stakeholders. Stakeholders in your ministry, stakeholders in your group. You know, we need to form relationships and support structures with those who believe in the full mission and the values of the group. That's what you've got to build as a leader. You've got to build it with people who firmly believe and they are related to and they support and they're willing to put in structures or their application of their life and their time into the full mission and the value of the group, not just run their own agenda and some way frame it within the context of what you're called to do as a group of people. Also understand that benevolence, charitable and economic incentives are potent factors in mission drift. People, benevolence. Well, you know, I can bring my charity, I can bring my person, I can bring my gift in kind, I can bring me, but with me comes this other thing. Or I can give you my economic incentive, my money, but with it comes another thing. And, you know, we have to be careful. These are potent factors. And I could give you a story out of business world where this has happened. Where in America, if I get my facts right, where years ago, way, way many years ago, you know that a number of, like, the institutions over there, tertiary institutions, were Christian. But there came a time when a particular man who wanted to fund these professors and wanted to fund the whole context of superannuation type things and pensions for professors and doctors and all this other stuff, and he funded it out of his, you know, philanthropy. But on a condition. And the condition was they were secular, not Christian. Totally changed the American education system even to this day. But they started. And so all of a sudden, this stakeholder took a place within a context of a full-on organization, not one, but others, many of them, and changed the society. So you've got to be careful who are the stakeholders in your ministry And you know, are they connected to and support the structure and the mission that you're actually trying to fulfill in terms of your group or your leadership team or whatever? Understand that influencers wield unseen power. And if you don't watch it, what can happen, and I've seen this, the cult of personality rises up within a group. And a cult of personality is exceedingly powerful, especially if that personal persons have the ability to articulate a strong message or put their point of view across in a way that makes it sound it's better than what the official one is. And then what happens, you've got this potentially divisive and corrosive attitudinal environment happening. And then what happens after that, like begins like. And like-minded people, and I call it in the old days, which when we was working with people in fixing their internal, inner healing part of their life up, I used to call it the community of hurts. One hurt gets another hurt, and they all sort of talking about their hurts. Well, the same way can be in potentially with people with great ideas. If they're not connected to the mission and values of the group, they can have this community of good ideas. And they become very powerful and potentially dangerous if they're not those ideas are not connected to the mission, the structures and the purpose of why you're doing on your team what you're doing. This is your stakeholders. You need to know your stakeholders in your team, especially those even you give voice to or you give leadership positions to that you put out in front in terms of follow that particular person. Remember what Paul said at the beginning? Choose those that you can. What? Follow, and you'll see, and they'll demonstrate it because they'll live like I do and how we do as a group and team together. Choose, so you, as a group of people, choose your stakeholders well. Number five, in staying mission true, is of the utmost importance that leaders measure what matters. What should they do? If you're not measuring what matters to you, then you're not doing what you should be mattered. What you should be doing, what matters. People often say to me, Ben, you have some pretty high expectations. I went, I do. Do you know I had the highest expectation? You know where it is? Right here. I don't have high expectations of Jonathan who works with me. Yeah. My higher expectation is of me. That's why I make myself accountable to a number of different people to hold me accountable to who I am in God. And, you know, if you don't measure, I need my life measured. I need to know that I'm actually fulfilling what God's called me to fulfill. And I need to know that I'm doing it. Now, it's not a mechanical thing for me because I've learned now how to do it and you know, go easy on myself. Don't build yourself up. You know, understand that what gets measured gets done. What gets measured gets done. Friends, let me say that again. What gets measured gets done. What is it? You know, mission drift is a well-worn business mantra. And for good reason. It's true. Basically, it's true. We will drift if we don't have some of these principles in place. You know, what's not measured will over time slowly become irrelevant. That's the other thing I found. If it's not measured, it will slowly drift off the center stage of why you're doing what you're doing. It just slips away. Now, it's a scary reality if it, you know, you can be, how can I put this? You can be personally successful or corporately successful in the things that you're good at doing, but those things are ultimately do not matter really in the overall structure of the organization. And they're not in terms of the organization's success. You can be individually successful in things that ultimately don't matter really to the organization's success. And I've had one of those. I actually had two of those in my life once. Not me personally, but in the ministries that I was involved in a Baptist church years ago. We were absolutely sick, going gangbusters and successful on this big inner healing stuff. Jubilee Counseling, it was called. We were known for it. But it wasn't what we were all about. The one thing that we were great at was not really the most thing in terms of the success of the ministry. And so the thing that we were trying to do wasn't measured in the way that we should have. And it wasn't until we started to look at this whole thing of, hey, this looks good because everyone's successful. My gifting successful. This is great. It's all going well. And it was good. It was impacting people. But for the overall good of the organization, you know what we had to do? Stop it. We had to close it down, shrink it in size and bring it back within the gamut of what we are called to do as a church at that time. There was another time when in a similar way, in another place, same thing. We had these people on staff. They were great, fantastic in a particular ministry. Every time we get together, everyone is pumped. Everyone's pumped. Everyone likes being pumped, don't they? Going well. Then we had to go after about, 12 months, we go, hang on a minute, looking at salvations, looking at this, looking at that, we're going, hey, we're all successful, but, it's not making one bit of success in the context of what we're trying to do and achieve as the ministry. I remember saying to this leader, you're going to have to cool it. What do you mean cool it? And then I get the lecture on all this, why it's successful. Now, was it impacting people's lives? Yes, it was good. But when it was put in the measure of everything, it was actually inordinate. It was out of shape with everything else. So we have to be careful. We've got to measure things. Because you can be very successful and grow something, but if you're not measuring in the overall health and well-being of the organization, it can take you off on a tangent very quickly. It should be our highest goal to remain faithful to our Christ-centered calling. That's what Paul's talking about this morning. And he stayed true to his personal calling and he stayed true to his mission mandate. And whatever you're doing in your micro communities in terms of how you lead them, it's you need to be implementing it within the context of excellence, not just for your ministry, but for the good of the whole community, the good of the whole organization. I won't go there. Is that okay? Okay. Let's go to part B, some foundational components. I'd like to give you five foundational components that I think needs to be in place in your groups in order to answer, again, the original question that Joe posed to me, how does my ministry or group fulfill the organization's mission or vision? And again, I framed them around five words, and they are purpose, value, culture, mandate, accountability. Okay, now the big one, let me spend a little bit more time on big one, on purpose. It's good to hear our brother talk about purpose today, again, in relationship to what he's pursuing here with you. How does my ministry, what I do or aspire to do, how does it add value to the organization's vision? Why is that important? Well, it's important because I know, because I've sat on the inside of this organization in terms of some of this stuff, it's important because they've taken time to pray into and develop the mission statement of this organization. One that articulates its central message and its priorities. However, in your group, in your ministry, it's too large, too broad, too multi-layered, and what your vision needs to be, it needs to be more specific and missional. So you can't actually just say, oh, we do that, because it's too big, too broad, too intense. So your purpose has got to come out of that, but it's got to become more specific and more missional in terms of why you're doing what you're doing. However, this big one sets the distinctive nature, because of what you do, because it's setting, has set and is setting this distinctive nature of the organization and its ministry trajectory. And you can't have your ministry having a trajectory that goes one way when the minister, the organization is going another way. And you must be, you know, must be careful, because the organization has taken, and I know, as I say, servants has done that. You've taken a lot of time to put together the what's guiding the ministries, what's guiding the overall impact of what you're seeking to do as servants. A lot of time's gone into that. So you don't want to set up something that's a conflict with that. Therefore, the organization's vision and mission must be the overarching banner, if you like, of your activities, whatever you're called to do in the context of your mission. You know, if ministries and groups can't explain how they fulfill that statement, the statement of how does my group, how does my ministry fulfill or fit into this overarching thing, then if that ministry, and are you one of those people, if you can't articulate clearly along the lines I'm talking to you about this morning, how you fit into this overarching capacity of purpose, then you need to think and pray about what it would look like if you actually brought your ministry into fulfilling that. Because it needs to. It needs to come under the overarching banner. So you can't have a purpose that doesn't fit within the context of the bigger picture. But you can't say we fit the bigger picture because it's too big. You need to actually come down to what is more specific and relational to you. Now, from my 40 plus years of experience, this doesn't, you know, if this doesn't occur, what happens? Ministries soon get out of step with the whole. And sometimes they become directionless. These are ministries like you lead. Sometimes they lose relevance. They also risk becoming places of discontent. They even start to adopt purposes and positions outside the mission trajectory of the organization. So you have to be careful. That's why purpose is so important. And I've said this to the leaders often here. You know, what's the purpose of what you do? What's the methodology of what you do? And then what are the practical outcomes? What's the missional outcomes of what you do? And do they fit within the context of the broad overarching umbrella? Your ministry vision must pick up at least one or two of the core aspects of the bigger picture and the core values of the supporting overall reason of why you exist. You know, what I do, why I do what I do, how I do what I do. If you don't, what happens also, you will risk what I call a cordial death without any renewed direction. So over time, it'll just die. It'll either become a nuisance or it'll be an aggravating aspect, or it becomes its own entity in terms of it sits there, but you tolerate it, but you don't really know what, because it's become too influential, so you can't take it out, or it becomes irrelevant, and we'll close that one down now. So if it doesn't have purpose, it'll just a cordial death. It'll go. So purpose is really, really, really important. So what much you have, you must have what? Purpose, as we're saying today. You've got to have purpose. And you've got to find your purpose, and your purpose can't be the big banner, right? What's your purpose got to be? Yeah, but what is it going to pick up? It's got to pick up one or two aspects of the values, the mission of the group. And then you need to be able to articulate that, as I said before, and the people who are part of you need to be able to articulate that. And then, because purpose has to be what? Measured. Purpose has to be measured. Value, number two, what? Value. The question to ask here is, how does my ministry reflect the organization's core values? So how does your ministry reflect? Now, I think Servants has seven core values, am I right? Something like that? I'm just reminding myself once in the board meeting, we're running through it and we forgot one. We went back and I think this, maybe I'm wrong, but you have values. Anyway, I know you have a bunch of core values. And so what I'm saying, the value, your group must reflect the organization's values. So however you do that, you have to make sure that you don't have a value system that is actually a clash with the organization that you're actually under. Culture. The question should be here, how does my ministry reflect the organization's distinctives? Uniqueness. You have a uniqueness. You have a uniqueness. It's called a way of life. Your way of life is different. So does your ministry reflect that way of life? Does your ministry, does what you do and what you say, how you articulate that to people, how you reflect the ministry characteristics of this place, do you reflect the distinctives of this, or are you just another church? Or are you just another group? How do you as a leader frame this? How do you frame this cultural distinctive called servants? Does the approach and actions of my ministry reflect the inherent characteristics of this particular culture that you're a part of? You know, the cultural fabric of this organization. By the way, this organization called Servants has a fabric to it, has a cultural fabric. Does your ministry, does what you do, are you engulfed within that fabric? Is it part of who you are? When people touch your ministry, are they touching all of Servants? Are they touching a micro-managed Servants? Because they need to. You can't, if I was one of your leaders, you can't have a Ben Gray culture. Ben Gray's culture, like Paul, must be because of my calling, but the mandate is not my mandate. I'm under a bigger mandate. The cultural mandate is not, let's support Ben Gray and what he's doing. It's supporting the cultural aspects of the reason why this ministry is set up in the first place. I'm part of the vehicle of that. You don't want people involved in that who are actually establishing their own culture, their own DNA. Mandate. Do the main components of my ministry add benefit to or extend the overall organization's mandate? Remember what Paul says. Don't even follow those people who don't fit within the context of that. So, you know, does it fit what you do, fit within the context of that broad, overarching organizational mandate? Understand that relationships are the content, not the mission, okay? Now, this is a big one because you're very relational people. But understand that relationships are the content, not the mission. They cannot be the substance. Relationships cannot be the substance. The mission is your substance. The relationship is that which forms the capacity to you to do that mission. The substance is connected always to the purpose, to the mission. And I've been in groups where we have toned back the mission, we've toned back the substance because we put the substance out here in terms of the relationship. And you need to have relationship, but you need to have revelation, the spirit, but you also need to have the outcome of why you're together. The mandate. Because let me tell you, if you don't, in that lovely sea of relationships, there's going to be a vacuum. What's going to be the vacuum? The mission. The vacuum is going to be the substance. Someone with great meaning and heart, never in an evil way, but great, they'll say, let's do this. They'll come up with this whole thing. Now, that could be totally out of step with the overarching organization's vision and purpose. Because if you make the relationships the substance, you can't make the relationships the substance. Because otherwise you'll wander here and wander there. Accountability. Accountability is the ministry leader, is the ministry leadership and its operation. So individually and now the mandate. So the calling and the mandate of the ministry. Is it transparent? Horizontally, that's this way, with the people that you're leading, and also vertically within the organization, the systemic relationship across the different things. So accountability. Are you personally, as leaders, how's your accountability? Do you have a horizontal accountability within the organization? And do you have a good vertical accountability so people can speak into your life and into the mission? They're my five in terms of you being fitting it together. Finally, three attitudes to help you stay on track. Are we doing okay? Number one, keep the message of the kingdom and the mission of the organization central in your mission or your group or your team. So keep the message of the kingdom, the reason why we're here anyway in the first place, the king and his kingdom. That's what we're here for. And the mission of the organization, why you are managing this micro community for in the first place. You wouldn't have this micro community. You wouldn't have this ministry unless it was part of the bigger picture. Keep it central. Keep those two things central. Number two, keep the vision of your ministry and the service it provides the focus in all your major decisions. So keep your vision while you're doing what you as a micro group, your vision and the service that you provide with that vision. Service is another word for outcomes and missions and whatever you do, service. Keep it central when you are making your decisions. Make your decisions based on that. Number three, regularly reorientate your ministry, group, or team to see that they are members of Christ in a company with a larger group of people. Make sure that your group does not get an us and them mentality. You're part of a larger group with a common mission and a common purpose. I have been in too many groups, both in Christian, especially in Christian circles as much, but yes, more so probably, where, you know, you love to think that you don't have us and them. But human nature is that we actually do fall into that category. And we have to be very careful if you're a leader. You cannot think us and them. You are part of a much larger purpose. You are members of a larger tribe, a unique, gifted group of people in this organization called servants. And you are governed by the overarching vision and mission of servants. And therefore, your company is your group. You're part of a larger company. I've been in parts of worship teams when worship teams thought that they were the be-all and end-all. And if they weren't there on a Sunday morning, then we wouldn't have worship. Well, too bad. Yes, we would, because worship is not connected to the group that stands on the platform. Worship is a lifestyle, friends. You know that. And I know that. So you have to be very careful. It's insidious, this thing. And that's how mission drip comes in. So in conclusion, in reality, it's not going to be easy for faith-based organizations like yours to stay true to the mission God has given them, no matter how good they are. It's going to always, it has been difficult, but it's increasingly going to be more difficult. In fact, it will be increasingly more difficult because, and more time-consuming, probably more costly as well as we go further and further. I mean, you just heard the brother this morning talk about, you know, workplace health and safety and all those sorts of things that you've got to think about when it comes to volunteerism today. Also, the currents of drift emanating from within the general society in which you and I live in are not doing us any favor either in leading these faith-based organizations. A most recent study on religious freedom by the Pew Trust in the USA paints a very troubling picture. They indicate that across the world, being a disciple of Jesus Christ is becoming increasingly difficult, dangerous, with increasingly more so, not just in worlds that you think it might be, but in first world nations like Australia. The rising tides of restrictions, rising tides of caveats being placed on religion, especially Christianity, is spreading quicker than we can say that. We have an impossible mission, actually. Leading complex, faith-based institutions or churches and missions and a remarkably difficult climate, ever-changing world. You know, and we've got to do this because God's called us to do that. And we have to do that while at the same integrating and submitting to the gospel of Jesus Christ, because that's why we're here. We have a unique vision, a unique mission. You, as servants, have a unique vision, a unique calling, a unique mission. And it's almost like to the point where it's, you know, it's almost inconceivable. How are you going to fulfill this? But you're called to do it, then you can do it. Thankfully, you know, even though it might seem impossible, we have a God of the impossible, don't we? We serve a God of the impossible. You know, we can hold on to the hope that is ours in Christ Jesus. Because remember, he who has hope has influence and authority. And we have our hope in Christ. That gives us influence and authority. We can hold on to that hope because, you know, we work not from our own strength, but from his strength. We can do this. We can run distinctive organizations. We can stay mission true. We don't have to drift. You know, and we'll accomplish this also not from our laptops, but from our knees. As much as we like our laptops. You know, not from our wisdom, but that which flows really from the throne of his grace. And staying true to that mission, heart, that God's given you, the core that God's given you as a group of people. You know, not with our hands thrown up in frustration sometimes because we don't know what to do, but hands lifted up in worship to Jesus, declaring that, Lord, we can do this. You are the creator of the universe. We can stay mission true. We don't have to drift. We can all be on our page in our respective areas of ministry, serving a greater good that's called servants. We don't have to be polarized around our own personalities or giftings and callings. Like Paul started off in saying, I have my call, and I have my mandate, and I have a group of people that actually model this. Follow people like that who model that. Try to do that in your own world the same way. Forgetting what lies behind you, but pressing on towards the goal. You have a goal as servants, and each one of you as leaders need to fit within the context of that larger purpose and find your purpose and vision within the context of the mission that you've called to run or serve within your particular field. You know, hands and hearts, in the sense, lifted up, praising him, thanking him for the precious gift that we have, you know, clay, in a sense. He puts this wonderful stuff in jars of clay, doesn't he? Us. So we can do it. You can do it because it's your calling as servants. And I just hope this morning as I've articulated some of these things that you can say, okay, how can I now go back and look at this? That's the reason why I've given you notes. And some of you, I hope you've been writing some things down and fill in some of those blanks. Because I want you to go back into your own spheres of influence and look at this and say, how do we stay mission true? How do we build a vision for our particular team or our function? How do we pick up the one or two things that are in the bigger scheme of things and make it work within what I'm called to do? How do I can put together these four or five things that, you know, my purpose, my culture, my mandate, how do I make sure that what I do fits within the context of the bigger picture? I believe that's how you can stay on the money. That's, I believe, how you can go back to my start this morning when I said to you, you know, Joe gave me this impossible question. How does my ministry fulfill the organization vision? How do I stay mission true rather than drifting off into some other thing that looks like a calling of God, but is not the calling of God for this group called servants? Amen.